Sahanavavatu, Sahanaubhunaktu, Sahavirayankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastomavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Right. Okay, so then the Nyaya Sutras. Then page 53, Sutra 1 to 14. Then purposive distortion of the secondary sense, upachara chala, is refuting the opponent by taking resort to the primary sense when the secondary sense is intended. Dharma vikalpa nirdeshe, right? So dharma means the nature of it. You've changed the nature from whatever is the primary to primary sense to the secondary. So you're taking the qualities of what it would be the natural definition. You're taking it into a different definition. So generally, it's you're taking it, like we see in the others, just to another definition. It's like you're taking it sideways, like that. But then this one, you're taking it backwards. It means that you're choosing a secondary for a specific instance. They take it back to the primary, and then in that way, try to show there's some fault. But then that will also be a problem here. Or saying denying the proper meaning of a word by taking it literally while it was used figuratively is upachara chala. Like you're saying, we said before is that the village on the Ganga. So we're not talking about the that famous city in Central America, I think of the Mayans, that was on floating reeds in the middle of the lake. We're not talking about that, because especially it meant Ganga and things like this. So that means it means on the bank, on the side. That would be the actual proper meaning. But you take it literally and say, what? How can it float on there? How can it be on the Ganga? This is stupid. Your argument is no, but that's not how it was being used. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. Dharma in the sutra means the use of a word in its proper sense. Right? In other words, in the primary sense. Dharma, vikalpa means the use of the word in a sense different from the one in which it is generally found. Dharma vikalpa means the use of a word in its secondary sense. Thus, the expression dharma vikalpa nirdeshe means when a word is used in a secondary sense. For example, the statement, the platform is calling. Mancha kroshanti, intended to mean those on the platform are calling, is refuted by taking the primary sense of the word platform. The platform does not call. Well, where in such a case is the invention of the opposite meaning? The invention consists in the attribution of a different meaning to a word used in some other sense, i.e., the attribution of the primary sense when the word is actually used in the secondary sense. In other words, the direct and indirect. It is called upachara chala because it rests on upachara. Upachara means the figurative sense. Right? So it's on the figurative where you're taking something of the situation and that, and then from that situation, then you're trying to, give some meaning there. But they take it out of that figurative from the upachara back into, the ideas that the platform is calling. How is the platform going to call? So that then here they're messing up. So when the primary, I mean the secondary is meant, because the primary, as we see before, as was described in and by Jiva Goswami in the Vedanta Sutra, when you have the direct meaning works, you will not use the secondary. And where the direct meaning doesn't work, then you'll use the secondary. So when you give the secondary, of course, how will the platform, call? it can't call. So that means it's the people on the platform. So the people on the platform are known as the platform, because only people will call you, right? The platform, because it's dead matter. It's not going to call. So that means it would be improper to try to push that point, since it doesn't make any sense. And you're complaining, oh, this doesn't make sense. But if it doesn't make sense, why did you use it? Right? You know, why do you attribute the lack of it making sense to the person who stated it rather than to yourself, who didn't actually appreciate what was going on? Or you're just trying to make trouble. Does that work? Right. So Sutra 1.2.15. Objection. Right? So now they're going to complain about this. The Upachara Chala is nothing but Vakchala, because there's no difference between them, right? Because Vakchala means you took the word and you shifted to the synonym. But here it's not exactly the same. You have to see is one is shifting and one is the intended primary or secondary meaning. Commentary about Sayana Rishi. One may say Upachara Chala does not differ from Vakchala because it has no difference from Vakchala. Both being the invention of a meaning other than what is intended, right? So you can say in a general category, but then that's not Vakchala, that's just Chala itself, right? Chala means you're taking a meaning different than what was intended. How you're taking that meaning, the finer details, then that's brought out by this Vakchala, Upachara, Chala. What was the third one? Do you remember?
Second one.
The second one.
Second, Samanya Chala.
Samanya Chala. So, in other words, there's something that the common point is there's a meaning meant by the person who's speaking. We take it and distort it into something else. So that the meaning that they are saying, we're not using. We're using another one. So we use the synonym here, like that. Yeah, use the synonym here. And that's the first one, the Vakchala. Then the second one, you take general characteristics that are there, but you don't take the characteristics meant, you take other characteristics. You know, like that. So you shift which characteristics are meant. And then this one, then we see is that it's taking it when you're using a figurative or a secondary sense or indirect, and you take it and use it as direct. So in any case, you adjust it from what was intended. So in that way, it's chala. But then there's three kinds. So that way you can identify, you know, very easily, because the more you can identify this, the more it throws off the opponent who is making these points. Does that make sense? When you give technical reasons why it is, it throws them off because they don't know that, right? Unless they know it and they're very, very carefully doing this, what they're planning to do this, then you're going to have the aspect that, but then why are you doing this? So, you know, is this, so if they know all the terminology and know how to use it, why are they throwing it into Vitanda? Why aren't they interested in Vada? Right? Because the Vada, then you're going to come up with an actual, you know, substantial reason. So are they, you know, they're using, just trying to defeat by not using anything that's substantive either to their philosophy. You know, it doesn't establish their philosophy. Because the point in defeating the other person's philosophy is to establish your own. But if you just defeat them, just to defeat, then that's a mistake. Does that make sense? So in general, then chala will be that you're trying to defeat the opponent by taking misdefining the meanings that they're giving to a particular word or an essential word, you know, in their presentation. And then you take it to something else so that you can, through advantage, try to defeat them. But it's not that by that defeat, then they establish their own philosophy. So we see is that it's not, in other words, it's not used in serious discussion. It can be used as joking with friends. That's especially like when it was brought up yesterday, is that Krishna is doing that with Srimati Radharani. Because it's just, you know, joking. You're having some fun. They say one thing and you switch it into some other words, you know, just to create some mood in that. So then she gets upset in a way to, you know, but it's joking. And so it creates the different flavors like that. Yeah. Yes.
So maybe example is how people try to redefine by national Hindu system or Hindu custom or caste system.
Yes, yes. Okay. So Pandavaji is making the point of that the, you know, just like someone is discussing Varnashrama, so they like to take it into the point of it's, a, you know, the caste system and or, you know, some kind of thing that they take it as it's bad or oppressive or non-inclusive or non, you know, all these, whatever it is here. Because here in Varnashrama, we simply mean the scientific aspect of what are natures. So if you can't scientifically tell the difference between one thing and another, like if you can't tell the difference between a hammer and a screwdriver, you're going to have a great difficulty building your house. You know, so it's not scientific. So the Varnashram is how you scientifically understand what someone's nature is. And then they go, you know, because people are talking about, I just want to be myself, be true to myself, but true to your, but who, one, you have who is yourself, who is the self. So, of course, we have the soul, not the body. But so the soul means then we're servant of Krishna. We have to see everything in context of Krishna. And therefore, the service is also in the context of Krishna. That is pleasing, favorable and pleasing to Krishna. But at the same time is, what medium are you going to use? What's the secondary form that you're going to use to perform this service? That's the Varnashram, right? So then in that, by identifying that, you're just being true to yourself. So here it is, they just want to, they don't want to be regulated. True to myself means I do whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it, however I want to do it. No one should say anything because it's up to me. So in this way, then they've taken the definition and taken it back into some general aspect. But trying to give it a negative connotation like that. So I think that would probably be the samanya that was there, the second one, where you take a general characteristic, but then they use it to a disadvantage. Would that, Haldarji? Would that be samanya or that would be this upachara?
A general meaning is samanya, upachara is secondary.
Secondary and to primary.
Yeah, if the primary meaning doesn't make sense, then we should take secondary, not...
You should take secondary, over. Not primary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just means a shift. So in other words, here, in any case, the principle is they're always trying to shift it to something that's advantageous for themselves and disadvantaged for your for means the other party. But they're not trying to find out the absolute, because otherwise, why would you use the shift? You would say, okay, so what do you mean by that? You made the statement, what do you mean? But no, they challenge it, not to get an explanation, but to throw it off. Is that okay? So, yes, no? Sutra 1.2.16. Answer. No, because there is a difference in the nature of the invention of meaning in the two cases of Chala, right? So, when you say you're inventing a meaning, I mean, it's just coming from your own perception, your own mind. And so therefore you're inventing on these three platforms, inventing by just switching the similar means the synonym, the similar meaning. So then you're switching that, or you're switching it by general into a different quality than what's meant, or you're in this case shifting it from secondary to primary. Does it also work the other way around? You're saying it primary and they take it into secondary in this one, or that's no, then that would be the samanya.
Because in the upachara, Because the primary meaning doesn't make sense, that's why we need to take.
But you need to take the secondary.
Yeah. You can't just stick to the primary and just say that your argument doesn't make any sense like that.
Okay. So if they take it from primary into secondary, where the primary makes sense, then take it, that would be more the samanya. That you've taken the general from the general.
But Maharaj, we don't take something. When the primary makes sense, there's no question of secondary, so we don't compare like that. It's alternative meaning, it's called.
Alternative meaning. Okay.
Because primary so secondary has a sense only when the primary doesn't make any sense. That's why then you need to take.
That's then you only use the secondary. Okay. Commentary by Bhatshyayana Rishi. Upachara chala is not the same as vakchala because its way of refutation with the help of the primary sense is different. From what? From the simple invention of a different but equally primary, meaning in the case of vakchala. Right? So you're taking the primary and then you're using another primary meaning instead of the one intended. That'll be vakchala. There's one thing to invent a different meaning and it's something else to refute with the help of the primary sense. In other words, while employing vakchala, one simply invents an alternative primary meaning. On the other hand, while employing upacharchala, one replaces the intended secondary sense by the primary sense unintended. So is everybody clear on this? Means vak means you have a primary meaning, it makes sense. They switch it into another primary meaning that could also make sense, but it's not intended. Then in this one, you're using the secondary meaning. And then instead of using that, they use the primary meaning and then throw it off. So in other words, it's always the non-intended meaning. So it's, that's, as you mentioned, it's invented, it's made up. Yeah? Yes, the Mayavadis and the Buddha, that means... Basically, anybody who's not following Vaishnava Vedanta is to some degree distorting the meaning. They might be using some other technical point or that, but they're taking the meaning and taking it out of its actual context and putting it into something else. So something they're attracted to in it, like they want to be God. You know, so the Mayavadis will distort to anything that can show that they're God. You know, so they're using the logic, okay, Brahman is the supreme. Then the Jiva is Brahman. Therefore, the Jiva is supreme. Right? You know, so that's their logic. So that would mean then, in that the Brahman would be the middle term. And then the Jiva would be the minor, and then the Supreme would be the major. You have to think about it. Yeah, it'll take some time before this soaks in, before you can just naturally figure it out. But I mean, that's the idea, is that if one understands the principle of what we're working with, then one starts to use it. And as you're using it, then you'll start to see. And then it'll start to fall into place.
Yeah, Brahman is the middle term. You want Brahman to say that Jiva is supreme because the supreme is supreme and there is a relation between supreme and Brahman, that is the Vyapti. Then Brahman and Jiva has a relation. Then now you're equating.
So yeah, you're equating. So then that would be hate for Bhasha, right? Because it'd be a kind of that where you're distorting the logic.
Yes.
So basically, if they're not talking Vaishnava Vedanta, then there's going to be distortion. There's going to be these things. The Hedva Bhasha. Yes. But it may be that they've seen something. Like sometimes you see is that, intelligent personalities, experienced personalities, they observe the material energy and they see some pattern there and they're able to make that connection. And so then you see that it has a wisdom to it. It's something that everybody can apply, but they're only seeing it in its secondary level, not secondary meaning indirect, but secondary meaning that it's not the primary level of the soul relation with God, the material world's relationship with God. They're seeing it just their relation with material energy. So on the secondary platform, it is wisdom, but it's not enough. You have to be able to connect that wisdom back to how it connects to Krishna, how it connects the living entity to Krishna. Then it becomes fully appropriate, fully proper. Is that? Yeah. Huh.
Because here we're talking about the intent.
Intent, okay.
So Krishna speaks about the intent is to
service. Yes.
So technically, only a pastor can know the intent.
Yes.
They cannot know, so they could still.
Yes.
They don't get access to the thought. First of all, they don't believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, you got that? It was good. No? Charu Chanda is saying that what you said, he couldn't understand at all.
All I heard was intent.
All he heard was intent.
We didn't hear what he said.
So maybe that was his intent, was just to confuse it. So he was saying it's like in Bhagavad Gita, then the actual intent, you know, as it means, is that aspect of surrendering to Krishna and pure devotion. So the jiva as the servant and Krishna as the supreme, and then us surrendering to him, because we see this in the last verse, that sarva dharma paritya jan, you do that through, you know, man mana bhava mad bhakta, like this. So that's the intent, that's the spirit of the Gita. And so because it's descending knowledge and because it's revealed by Krishna, and Krishna says only to the devotees, that means other than devotees, no one else can actually understand Bhagavad Gita. So they have to give a distorted understanding. And depending upon their value, then it'll be a karma, or it'll be gyan, you know, or some kind of mix, or whatever it is they're used to, you know, whatever it is they want to bring out, you know, nonviolence, you know, that's a popular one, you know, or there is nothing, you know, the Buddhist, or we're all God, you know, the Mayavad one, or, you know, just, you know, be the stoic, you know, get in there and just do and tolerate, don't get distracted. So all these things may have a meaning in the secondary sense in its proper context and relationship between Chit Achyut Ishwara. But if it's not seen in that context, then it's a distortion. And so they don't see it in that context. So their intent is a distortion. You know, but we can see, because much of the time, even you hear others talk all kinds of things. If you, in the philosophy, you know how that connects back to Krishna. So you may be connecting all these things, but they're in no way connecting it. So in other words, you wouldn't ask them how to apply it. But in hearing them, because you can connect everything to Krishna, then you find where it'll match and what is their value, what kind of thing they're into. You know, like the yogis are always talking about being peaceful and being satisfied and this, that. So what does it mean? They're not peaceful, they're not satisfied, they're disturbed. So that's the point you can go after. Otherwise, normally we just talk about yoga and the techniques and this and that, which is one way of trying to take it as long as you keep it going. But the other is, why are we doing this? What's the intent? The intent is we want peace, we want that, but can we get it through this? You know, and why we're getting something from here. There is regulation. You're following the, you know, the scriptural definitions. And so you will get something. But the actual thing is when you realize that the Lord, everything belongs to him, then following that, then you get peace. Then you'll get satisfaction. So it means, so that will be a more direct way of cutting in there. And you see, Prabhupada and the Acharyas will do that. Same time, they can also take the technical thing, you talk yoga and all that, then it's control of the body, the senses, body, mind, the Astanga process, and then controlling, then fixing it on Vishnu. And then what are you trying to do? Be absorbed in Vishnu. And then that is what will give the satisfaction. So if we're becoming a little more peaceful in that just by sitting in asana and controlling the lifestyle a bit or controlling the breath a little bit, and we're getting so much benefit, imagine what you'd be getting when you actually follow the real purpose of yoga. You know, so either way you can do, or a combination. So you see sometimes in Prabhupada's lectures that there's, he'll take that those secondary elements and then bring them up to the primary. Or he'll just cut through whatever's been going on and just go right straight to the primary. Because by discussing the secondary, people may get distracted. You know, so why? And once they understand, then you can see how it connects. Is that good? Okay. Sutra 1.2.17. Further, it is claimed there is no difference between the two, namely Vakchala and Upacharachala. Then on the ground of partial similarity among all the forms of chala, there is the possibility of only one form of chala. Right? So they could claim is that all these things are the same because of that partial similarity and this and that. So therefore, you could just say there's only chala. Right? So then here is saying, admitting the commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi, admitting chala to be twofold on the ground of partial similarity between upachara chala and vakchara chala is denied by the opponent that chala is threefold. Right? So he's trying to get rid of two and then get rid of one and leave two. But he's pointing out as no, but here Gotama has said there's three. This ground which rejects the view that chala is threefold also rejects the view accepted by the opponent that chala is twofold, because partial similarity also exists between the two forms of chala admitted by the opponent. Right? Partial similarity, so you could end it up with one. If you take it from three and say there's only two, you could also say it's just one. Therefore, if the opponent claims that the view, namely, chala is twofold, is not negated on the ground of partial similarity, then the view that it is threefold cannot also be negated on the same ground of partial similarity. Right? So in other words, if you're saying there's only two, because, oh, these three are basically similar, so therefore we can take it out, but these others are also. So you can't say it's two. Then it becomes one. So the point is no, there's three different forms. It's subtle, but there's three different forms. You know, that'd be like saying, okay, there's ice cream. And so then it's chocolate ice cream, vanilla ice cream, or strawberry ice cream. But it's all ice cream, so there's only one kind of ice cream. You know, does that make sense? Or you can say, vanilla and strawberry are similar because strawberry is just vanilla ice cream with some strawberry in it. And it's also basically white, so therefore then it's only two kinds of ice cream. You know, but if you're saying that, but there's vanilla also in the chocolate one. You know, just because it's a different color, why would that be the big deal? Because if you're not taking taste and three different tastes, then why so you're judging it on color or this or that. So the point is that there's going to be the threefold is what's to be established, right? So these three have there that you're taking the word in the primary sense and you're using another primary sense that basically could work, but that's not what's intended. The second one then is you're taking the primary sense and then you're taking it into the generality of that primary sense and then choosing a different application of that primary sense. You know, just saying it's similar. And then the third one is then you're taking the secondary sense, means you're intended, and then you're taking it back to the primary. So you see is there is a difference there, and because of that difference, you get three different kind of forms of it. So it's all chala, but it still has a different way. And so if you can identify it, it makes it clearer to you when people ask all the different kinds of questions or challenges, which one they're using, because when you know that, then it makes it easier to point out what's wrong in it. Because if you go through this and explain it like this, they won't necessarily know what they're, you know, it'll diffuse their, yeah, their enthusiasm, yes. So, yeah. Sutra 1.2.18. Generality based on false analogy. jati is refuting the opponent by pointing to superficial similarity and dissimilarity. Footnote 32. A disputant says the soul is inactive because it is all-pervading as ether. His opponent replies, the soul is inactive because it bears similarity to ether as being all-pervading. Why is it not active? Because it bears similarity to a pot as being a seat of union. The reply is futile because it overlooks the universal connection between the reason and the proposition which is consistent in the arguments of the disputant, but missing in the arguments of the opponent. Whatever is all-pervading is inactive, but whatever is the seat of union is not necessarily active. Right? Where the two come together doesn't mean it's active. You know? So the whole point is you're giving an example of something else that doesn't actually, you're using a false connection, a false similarity. So you're not changing the meaning of the word or this or that. You're just giving an analogy that doesn't actually match, you know, by using the wrong qualities that are there. Okay, Riti, His Holiness Suhotu Swami. Jati means generality, but as used here, it is a technical term used to describe a debate in which an unfair reply or conclusion is based on a false analogy. Suppose, for example, that someone is arguing that sound is non-eternal because it is an effect of a certain cause. Just as a pot is produced from clay, but another argues that sound must be eternal because it is non-material, like the sky. This counter-argument trying to prove the eternality of sound by comparing it with the non-material sky is fallacious because there is not necessarily a universal relationship between the non-material and the eternal. In the Nyaya system itself, sound is considered to be a non-eternal quality because it is produced and can be destroyed. Some other systems, however, do not agree with this view, right? So different schools, we'll see later when we get into Vedanta Sutra and these other aspects, that they're going to, the different schools have the different elements of philosophy that they accept or don't accept. And so they base their philosophy on that. So understanding that, then you can see, okay, where's their strength and weakness, right? So if one philosophy has a strength in an area, another has a weakness, you can use that philosophy that has the strength to defeat the one with the weakness. You know, just like Krishna did with Nanda Baba using Karma Mimamsa, because it was strong in that aspect, but, you know, and it defeated another one that was just, well, people do it, we don't know why. Right, but it still is a weak point in compared to Vedanta. But he could defeat the point and establish devotional service just using that aspect. So in this way, we may use, you know, an argument from yoga or Shankhya or like this to defeat something, because that's all the more you need. And then once you do that, then you establish the Vedanta point.
Also, Maharaj,
that makes sense. Yes.
Regarding the six schools, like they are just referring to absolute truth, but nobody discusses absolute truth except for the Vaishnava Vedanta. So okay. What they say necessarily may not be wrong, like here.
Yes.
Sound as a non-eternal and quality. It's referred to the mundane aspect of, you know, from ether sound is produced, that aspect of.
Yes.
But the connection of it to the transcendental, that they're not even discussing or they're not even bothered about talking.
Yes. So up to that point, it's useful.
Yeah.
But if you want to go beyond that, then we know in the creation that sound and ether are produced, so they're not eternal. You know, and if you say, okay, the atoms, you know, they're eternal. But then the point is yes, those atoms are eternal. But the point is there's going to be the temporarily manifest as separate atoms that you can make into things. Otherwise, you know, if they go back into pradhan, it's just all mixed together and there's no manifestation of any specific forms of them. And so that eternality is not because the material energy itself then has a value on the eternal platform, it's because that comes from Krishna, and so therefore the Pradhan as Brahman is eternal, but the manifestation of the creation and that's temporary. So that's what we call a materialist, what's temporary and what's seen not connected to Krishna. So if you see it connected to Krishna, that aspect of connection, that's what's eternal. But it's manifestation and the living entity's perception of that without Krishna, that's the mundane.
Also, the faulty aspect is when the disciples or the followers of that school don't accept the scriptures which says about a higher truth. That's the main fault or the weakness of the six schools.
Ah, okay.
The Acharya himself never even talks about that or points in that direction in general.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, no, you don't see it here. I'm talking about Bhagavatam. We're going into higher levels or all that. And actually, Upanishads is not their main form. Upanishads is only basically quoted by the Mayavadis. Because the others, the Mimamsakas on down, then they're just quoting from the Vedic literature and establishing that from the Samhitas, but they're not quoting from Upanishads. That's a very interesting point. So they don't get to what's beyond. So they're
referred to.
So, sorry?
They're referred to absolute truth. The whole goal is to refer to that, but they don't actually discuss. That's what Bhaktivinoda points out in Jaiva Dharma, that there is no sadhana and sadhya.
Okay. So they'll just Chidishwar discuss that a bit. So only the Sambandha aspect, but Abhideya and Prayojana, because Abhideya is as bhakti and Prayojana. So when you take the knowledge and combine it with the desire to please the Lord, the Ladini, that becomes the bhakti shakti. So they don't do that. So only through bhakti can you actually understand the complete absolute truth. So that means that basically they understand the situational to some degree and a little bit of knowledge. So there's basically the impersonal with the touch of the super soul, but there's no, they don't go beyond to Bhagavan. They can't understand Bhagavan. So only in Vedanta, Vaishnava Vedanta, then you actually, that's what makes it unique, because then there's Bhagavan. So then you have all three features.
Yes.
Very nice. Very, very fundamental. Okay.
Yes.
Nice. Okay. Vriti. Next, Nigrahastana, which is the 16th Padartha, is described. Sutra 1.2.19. Point of defeat, Nigrahastana, means the demonstration of contradictory knowledge, vipratipati, or ignorance, apratipati, on the part of any of the contestants. So it means contradictory knowledge, or they're even contradicting themselves and explaining what they're talking about, or ignorance. They just have no idea what they're talking about. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. Contradictory knowledge means either erroneous, viparita, or crude, kutsita, knowledge. One with such contradictory knowledge becomes defeated. Nigrahastana means nothing but this point of defeat. It doesn't mean that they understand they're defeated. It just means that they've already, if you're trying to come to an actual conclusion, they've already lost the plot. So their position has already been refuted just on the grounds of their own understanding and mentality. But it's not that they'll necessarily understand that, because you're dealing with ignorance here, because the contradictory, they don't actually understand the knowledge, they're using the wrong knowledge. Or it's the ignorance on their part is they just have no idea what they're talking about. You can't get to vada, which is actually understanding conclusive knowledge, because they're working with ignorance, you know, or covered by passion. But does that make sense? So Nigrahastana doesn't mean that he's been defeated. He is defeated, but he may or may not appreciate that. you might point it out, and hopefully at that point it either restarts the conversation in a more proper, you know, forward-moving method, or it gets them to, you know, just stop talking, and, you know, you don't waste any more time. Does that make sense? So nigrahasana doesn't mean he's been defeated. It just means that they're in the state of defeat, because they don't, it's useless for a debate, because what they're saying makes no sense. It's not logical.
Also, Maharaj, in a debate, it's not only two people, there is a judge. So the judge already decides he's gone, defeated. He may jump up, just like in a yes. match or somebody. Then after three times you say, or you know, after they count and you're defeated, afterwards you can jump and say whatever you want, but you're defeated. That's it.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, that's nice. Does that make sense? So it's just that point at which you're defeated because you don't know what you're talking about. It's not, we're meaning the point where you've gotten to, what's it called, nigamana, or what's the term he used before, where it means you've come to the end of the conversation. You know, you've established the point. Nirnaya, yeah. You haven't come to nirnaya. It just means that he's come to nothing. So therefore, in that point, it fizzles out. So it's in. But we're not meaning that when it comes to nirnaya, okay, now we've come to the conclusion. And so now we can establish that conclusion based on the scriptures, and that's siddhanta. Yeah.
Also, that's why, Maharaj, nirnaya and other things are only in vada. When we say about jalpa and vitanda, then these things come. Nigrahasthana and because they don't want to accept. Already the intent is pointed out.
Yeah, and they just want to keep
they
going.
Both have positive intent.
Yes. Okay, interesting. Okay. Okay, so then when you're talking about this, in jalpa, what do you call it? Jalpa vitandi,
yes.
Then hate vabasha, chala, and jati, then the end of that discussion is nigrahasthana.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So what about the case when the opponent is defeated, then he can decide whether the winner. Like, you know, Manpa Chen defeated someone, but they can decide.
Okay.
Is this also nigrahasthana?
Oh, okay. So the question is that, let's say you have the example of Madhvacharya then discussing with some of these big, big Maya bodies, and they become bewildered, they have nothing more to say. And so he's defeated them, and then they surrender and become his disciple. But in that case, it's because Siddhanta's been applied. You've come to that. So then whatever they were saying before, they don't know what more to say, because what they're, you know, what they were speaking was not based on the absolute.
Also,
so they may be. Go ahead.
When we read that stories carefully, these big, big pundits, they are very truthful. They are like, you know, to whatever extent they have been realized, they were following. For them, Brahman is the truth, and they are following sincerely. When an acharya comes and points out how that doesn't make sense, there should be something beyond. Now everything makes sense again. Like, you know. For them, it's not that he needs to sit and give hours and hours of discussion. He just points out where the fallacy is. They in their heart know that there's a fallacy, but for them, that there is nothing beyond. So you need to accept it as, like, you know, inconceivable, this, that. And when Acharya comes and shows, they just surrender, because they showed now a higher aspect of the truth.
Mm. Okay, so they were looking for vada. They wanted to know the absolute.
Yes.
And when he can point out the weakness, what they're doing and what is the absolute, then they surrender. So it's not that, so they move from a position of nigrahasthana to a position of actually understanding what is the absolute. So the nirnaya, they come to, they realize the siddhanta, or at least appreciate it, and then they surrender.
They are not necessarily on nigrahasthana, Maharaj, because what they point out about Brahman is true, because it is the impersonal aspect.
Okay, okay.
They just don't know a higher aspect, like, you know, deeper sense.
Okay, okay.
So they are qualified people. That's why they could qualify for bhakti.
That's what...
Not like the Buddhists.
Okay.
Buddhists always ran away from him.
The Buddhists always ran away because, yeah, because they don't know. Yeah, so in other words, they're speaking a certain a level of truth, but not beyond that. And so then when they come in contact with that knowledge beyond that, then they accept it and take it up. Okay, so it's not... Halayana Thai is pointing out that it's not Nigrahastana. It's just that they only knew, let's say, the Sat point, and now they're showing Chit and Ananda and how that goes together. Then they see that's... Then now it makes sense, everything. They were not aware that they were disciple and guru. Yes, it was disciple and guru, but they... So because it was Vada. He was trying to understand. It's like that one... I think there's one famous one. I don't know who it was, but after Madhvacharya had done his tour, I think, and he came back to somewhere in South, then this big pundit came to him and said, I've read your commentary, and you know, it's very nice, everything makes sense, but this one point.
Padmanabha,
and he said, sorry?
It's Padmanabha Tirtha, I think. Later on, he writes all the nice commentaries.
Oh, okay. So he was in South, Padmanabha Tirtha.
He was a great scholar at that time.
Yes. So then he asked him, I mean, he says, so what's this point? He says, how the jiva, as part, you know, part of the Lord, when he then comes to the Brahman platform, you know, why aren't they merged? And so then why will there be difference? And then how would you apply bhakti because there's not two? You know, because they become merged. So then Madhvacharya, then that they use these like square little stands that have sides on them. They have feet, and they're like a table that has a little bit of a lip on it, so things don't fall off. And they put the puja stuff. So they'll have a gindi for washing hands and that, and they'll have their achman cup in there. So he had the servant bring that, and he took the, you know, and they're both full of water. So he took out the achman cup and the gindi, and then poured them into that stand, you know, so they're one thing. And then Padmanabha Tirtha, he said, exactly. And then Madhvacharya put the two on the ground, picked up that stand, poured the water back into the gindi, and poured it back into the achman cup and put it down. And then Padmanabha Tirtha just sat there for a moment, offered as a basis. Yeah. So that's one of your better debates with few words. Yeah. Because he's looking, like Halayana Thai was saying, he's looking for the absolute truth. So he's sincere. So what he knows, he follows, like you see with those, the Prakashananda Saraswati. They are sincerely looking. So when Lord Chaitanya points out the weaknesses and point out what the actual position is, then they themselves start talking about weaknesses. But it's one of those things, because the Acharya said, they just accepted it, though it didn't make any sense. So they just keep on pushing the line, even though it doesn't make actual sense. But now when Lord Chaitanya points out what actually is the standard and the position, and how whatever they're thinking is already within this, but only in these features of sat and a touch of chit. But now the full chit, and then the aspect of actual Ananda, that wasn't touched on. When they see all three features, then they can see where theirs fit in. And then those weaknesses that they saw before, those then are removed, because now you have the complete picture. So it doesn't, because if you're trying to give the effect of all three positions of Sat, Chit, Ananda, but you only have the knowledge of Sat and some of Chit, you can't actually answer all the questions. You know, so they have their little answers, green bird and the green tree and these kind of things, you know, like that. But anyone can go and see the green bird in the green tree, you know.
So, only when they think, they can understand.
Yes, yes. Means if your intent is, that's the meaning of vada, means the speaker's intent is sincere, and who's listening, their intent is sincere. then they can actually come, then it becomes vada, and then you actually come to the nirnaya and therefore siddhanta, which is what you're trying to get to, right? Yeah, then it'll work, yes. Yes. So both have to have that sincerity. Like that. Okay. Nigrahastha means nothing but this point of defeat. Ignorance, apratipati, on the other hand, is the failure to play one's own part in the debate, i.e. one suffering from ignorance does not refute the position advanced by the opponent, nor refutes the charges advanced against one's own position. Right, so he can't refute the other person trying to establish their philosophy, and he can't refute them showing the weaknesses in yours. So then that point is nigrahastana. Right, again, footnote 33. Example of demonstration of contradictory knowledge. Proposition, whatever is not quality is substance. Reason, because there's nothing except color, etc., quality. Person who argues in the above ways to be rebuked as a fool for his reason, which admits only quality, opposes his proposition that admits both quality and substance. Right? Whatever his quality is the substance, and then he says, but there's nothing except color or quality. So he's mentioned that there's two, and then he gives his reason only one. He has to show both. Example of demonstration of ignorance. Disputant, fire is not hot. Opponent, but the evidence of touch disproves such a statement. Disputant, in order to gain confidence of the assembled people, says, oh, learned audience, listen, I do not say that fire is not hot. Right? So he said fire is not hot. And then he says, no. Everyone, listen, I'm not saying fire is not hot, but, you know, it goes off into some other thing. So you see that used very much in the modern context of journalists and other, they say something, and then you pull them up on that. But so then you said this, and no, that's not what I'm saying. Or saying, you know, like that. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. The point is being made in the Daksha Yajna, before speaking so many offensive statements about Lord Shiva, Daksha first announces, I'm not going to say anything, you know, bad or wrong or offensive. So then when he's speaking about Shiva, then he's making it, well, he's low class anyway. Well, I'm just speaking truth, so it's not offensive. So he tries to point out, but because he doesn't understand Shiva's position, that he's actually greater than him. Shiva's above the Prajapatis. You know, then. Vriti, His Holiness Sahoja Swami. Nigrahastana may be translated as the grounds on which a person is defeated in his argument. When a proponent misunderstands his own or his opponent's premises and their implications, then he becomes helpless and must eventually admit his defeat in the debate. The point at which he accepts his defeat is called Nigrahastana. When he sees, so here's even pointing out that when he understands that what's wrong, then it is. But otherwise, it can be, as Haladhar pointed out, is that there's a judge, then the person doesn't understand. He's already, the grounds for defeat are there, even though that person who is in that position may not understand it. But, you know, to the others around, it's more obvious. Right. Sutra 1-220. Jati and Nigrahastana are various forms. Because of the manifold, vikalpa, forms of refutation, by pointing to superficial similarity and dissimilarity, and again, because of the manifold forms of contradictory knowledge and ignorance. Here ends the first chapter of the Nyaya Sutra. Okay, so on the fourth day, we finish the second day.
From the next chapter onwards, actually, they start describing each of them in detail. But the main challenge is in presenting them is they get into the detail of describing only from the perspective of Nyaya. especially the Pramanas and Prameyas. So I felt at this point, it's not required for us unless we want to go, because this course was not meant for understanding the depth of Nyaya Shastra. It's only meant for understanding Nyaya Sutras in the context of our application in the Vedanta.
Yes. So, yes.
What we did in this first chapter is sufficient for appreciating Panchanga Nyaya and then all the 16 Padarthas and see it from a more holistic perspective. And that's what the same thing we'll next learn in Mimamsa Sutras, along with more appreciation about the context of Vedas and then how to view Vedas in case seemingly when certain things happen, as certain things we think are contradictory. So in that context, how we need to see. And then
yes.
The Adhikarana is what is described there.
In the Adhikarana?
Yeah. The Adhikarana has this. The Vishaya Samshaya Purva Paksha Uttara.
Okay.
Siddhanta.
Okay. Very nice. Yes, so in other words, understanding these principles, maybe we don't know all the fine details, but it's enough that we can then appreciate when we're discussing things, one, ourselves, how to avoid, you know, illogical presentation, but others, when they try to challenge or ask questions, then where's the weakness that it's not actually valuable for coming to the proper conclusion. And so in that way, it's enough for us when we're dealing here. And then in the future, it can always be developed into something. If someone has that nature and ability, they can go in and get into the detail to just make it a little bit more refined. But here, because this is the principle, this will remain even with the details. All that means the other chapters of details are based on this chapter. So the better you know this chapter, then the better the other ones may be understood. And if you only know this chapter, then you still can use it. So that's the advantage of the descending process, is when you know the top principles, they can always be applied. And then the other details, it's in this situation, use this, and that one, you use that. But otherwise, the principle always remains. So then in that way, it becomes very solid for appreciating alongside the philosophy. Yes, no. Very good. Maybe. Okay, thank you. Sanitai. So then we finish this Chaitanya Upanayanam course.
Yeah.
So then next class we'll continue with the Bhakti Sandarbha.
Yeah.
Okay. So I hope. So anything else, or there's time? No? Okay, so then we'll see you all soon.
Next class means...
Oh. It should be Monday. That's the idea. So then...
Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.